This episode is sponsored by Linode. Do you need a Linux server for your latest creation? Then check them out. They provide native SSD storage, 200 gigabit per second network connections, Intel E5 processors, and top-of-the-line hardware to run your servers on. It deploys Linux in seconds from a Linode cloud, and you can choose your Linux distribution and node location right from the manager. They have locations in Asia, North America, and Europe, and a sweet set of tools to make it easy to manage it. If the web interface isn't your thing, they also have an API and a command line. They also provide two-factor authentication, IPv6, DNS manager, plumbing, scaling, and everything else you would want. So get the most out of your Linux node by checking them out at linode.com or devchat.tv/linode. Hello and welcome to React Native Radio, episode 86. I'm your host, Nader Dabit. Today on our panel, we have Lee Johnson.
How's it going?
We also have Spencer Carley.
Hey, everyone.
And today our special guest is Sasha Grief. Welcome back to the show, Sasha.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me back again this year.
It's a pleasure to have you back. I'm really glad you came back because it seems like the stuff that we're talking about and the surveys and things that you're involved with are getting more, you know, more and more users and more data. So there's just a lot to kind of go over.
Yeah. I mean, with JavaScript, there's always things to talk about. There's always more data and more libraries coming out. So,
and that brings us to kind of the topic. And the topic is going to be the state of JS survey, the rising stars, data aggregation. And we'll talk about, you know, the difference between those two. And we'll also kind of talk to Sasha just to kind of see what he's working on, because he's super involved with a lot of different things. And he has a lot of interesting things kind of that he's done. And it's kind of cool to talk and just kind of see what he's doing. We had him on the show about a year ago. You probably remember if you've been listening. So we're just kind of having him back and kind of dive into similar topics. So, thanks for coming on again. So I guess the first thing to kind of to kick things off, what are you doing these days, other than putting together all this awesome information for everyone?
So I'm doing a bunch of things. So first off, of course, the survey, that's more like a one-time project. It's like once a year. So it did take me a couple weeks, months last year. But apart from that, I maintain an open source project called Vulkan.js, which is a React and GraphQL framework. Maybe we can go more in details later, but basically I'm trying to build the Rails for GraphQL, if you will.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Let's definitely talk about that.
It's open source, so the cool part is, you know, it's a community effort where everybody kind of brings their own skills and we build it little by little. So I don't think it's quite ready to take over the world yet, but it might be someday. And I also have like a day job where I'm actually building an app using Vulkan.js. So that's also pretty cool because I'm able to, well, dog food my own framework and also like get paid to work on open source, which is always like a huge plus. And the app I'm building is basically an Airbnb type service for a company here in Japan that rents out apartments and houses and so on. So the project in itself, there's nothing like groundbreaking, but it does let me put my framework in practice. And I also maintain a newsletter called Sidebar at sidebar.io. So it's a design newsletter and it also uses Vulkan. So I'm trying to get some synergy going on between my different projects, because otherwise it can get a bit tough to juggle all these balls at the same time. But since everything is kind of in that JavaScript, React, GraphQL sphere, it's still manageable.
Right. So it sounds like you're kind of getting into GraphQL and React at this point in time. I would love to talk about more about the whole GraphQL thing as part of the data that we're going to be talking about. But what do you see about GraphQL personally that you like about it?
Wow, there's a lot to like. I mean, I think the concept makes a ton of sense. So the way you describe the data you want and you only get that data back, the way you only have a single endpoint, it just makes a lot of sense to me, like on a, I guess on a conceptual level. And then practically speaking, that concept unlocks a lot of really cool things you can do. One example, a really practical example I like to give that people might not think of right away is, so I run this newsletter called Sidebar. And when you are sending a newsletter, right, if you want to kind of generate it automatically, it means aggregating lots of contents from different parts of your app, different parts of your API, basically. So you might have posts, comments on these posts, and then authors on these comments on these posts. And without GraphQL, I had this huge loop with nested loops to get the comments, to get the posts, comments, and so on. And you can replace all of that by a single GraphQL query, which is pretty awesome.
That's nice. Do you write the backend as well? And what are you doing as far as, like, I guess, creating the bridge between GraphQL and your backend? Like, what kind of resolvers and things like that are you working with?
Yeah, so this is in Vulkan. So I wrote the Vulkan backend myself, but you can, you know, there's tons of services. So besides Vulkan, there's Prisma, which was launched by the GraphQL people, which kind of does some of the same things. There's GraphQL itself, which is a hosted GraphQL backend. So, you know, there's a lot of options, or you can roll your own, like write your own schema and your own resolvers and everything. But once you get, you really understand the concepts, writing the backend isn't actually that hard because it's more or less associating like a GraphQL field with a resolver function that retrieves data for it. And that data can come from literally anywhere. So, you know, a lot of people in the beginning think that GraphQL is kind of like a database where you have to learn a syntax or something, but it's not actually like that at all. Like it's literally, hey, I want the user field, and you just specify how that field is resolved. In other words, it's fetched, and you do that for, you know, most of your fields. Some of them can be kind of automated, and at the end of the day, you get your GraphQL API.
Yeah, I think a good segue into your state of JavaScript is one of your insight number four talks about GraphQL, right? And one of the things you guys collected in your survey is the answer that the developer wants to learn more about that, right? And that was one of the areas that GraphQL was really high in. Is that the people have heard of it and they want to learn more about it, they just don't know it yet. And I think your Vulkan is very interesting because I've recently been through the GraphQL, I guess, learning curve. And I think most people probably go through the same process. It's awesome at first as you scratch the surface and then you get deeper into it. And at one point I was going to ditch the whole project and just go with Rails API because I was so frustrated with it. But then you get through that and you start to really then understand it all. But the biggest issue is there's nothing really like Vulkan to help people with that big section of I've heard of it and I would like to learn it. There's not enough right now for that. Is that kind of what pushed you to Vulkan, or did it just happen organically?
Yeah, exactly. I think, so it kind of happened the other way around. Like I had Vulkan before, which was using Meteor's own data layer, and GraphQL just seemed like a natural like evolution. So I migrated to GraphQL on Apollo about a year and a half ago, maybe. So I did that for two reasons. One, it was a good fit for Vulkan itself. And two, like you said, I thought there was a missing piece in that ecosystem of like a framework that will help you get started, kind of give you some structure for your backend and your frontend as well. Because, you know, even if you have your backend, you still need to write all this data loading code, pagination, you know, forms and all that. So I wanted to automate that with Vulkan as well. So in a way, I'm trying to get back to that like Rails-like developer experience where things kind of just work out of the box, which I feel we haven't gotten back with the more modern single page apps and the whole new way of writing web apps. So yeah, that's my, I guess, mission in a nutshell.
So I'm curious, when you're working on something like Vulkan, which was initially backed by Meteor, even someone who's working on an application that is built on some sort of REST API, like what's that process of going from that existing data transport layer towards something toward with like GraphQL? Because like I'm very interested in GraphQL. I'm really just starting to actually get into it now. But kind of the pushback I see from some people, just basic discussions, is like, what's that process of actually going into it, especially like you got the experience with Meteor where it's basically like all buy-in of Meteor, but that's not the case for GraphQL, right?
Right. So, well, I guess there's a lot to unpack here. For Vulkan specifically, my goal is really to make it like a full stack all-in-one framework. So it's not really targeted at people who want to port an existing app like bit by bit. So you either start a new project or you migrate your whole app. But currently, yeah, it would be a hassle to kind of merge Vulkan with something else. If you're not using Vulkan, though, you can definitely like keep your REST API and then maybe, you know, one part of your API, switch it to GraphQL, to a service like GraphQL. I guess the main downside is you would then need to add like Apollo client or some kind of GraphQL client just for that part of your API, but you know, if it's not too much, you can definitely do that. I think there's also like ways to wrap a REST API inside a GraphQL endpoint, because you know whatever a REST API endpoint can do, GraphQL can as well. You know, so I'm pretty sure there's some services or some utilities that will just let you like get all that JSON REST data in and then redispatch it via GraphQL. So that could be a good place to start. But yeah, generally, I think it's not really a GraphQL problem. Like migrating any kind of app to any other like data layer, it's always like a big deal. And the good thing for me is that GraphQL makes it very easy to future-proof your apps, I think, because it really helps you standardize you know, the way you make your API calls, the way you fetch data, the way you mutate it. So, for example, one thing I want to work on for Vulkan in the next couple of months is kind of tweak its API to become compatible with Prisma and GraphQL, which means that you could like just change the endpoint and then get your data from a different service, for example. And that's possible because you have this kind of really explicit way of dealing with data.
Speaking of GraphQL and Prisma and all this GraphQL stuff, have you looked at AppSync?
No, I haven't.
So AppSync is still like not live yet, but it's something I'm working on with AWS. It's basically like a GraphQL as a service, similar to how I guess Firebase is, with authentication and all that stuff kind of already configured with Firebase. With AppSync, we have just like the GraphQL implementation kind of on its own, but we also offer things like fine-grained access control using whatever authentication provider you're using. So I would probably add that to the mix as well. And if actually you do want to kind of like get together on something with that, let me know.
Yeah, that sounds like it's solving a lot of the problems that I'm also looking at. I think, you know, in the next couple of years, there's just going to be a ton of similar frameworks popping up. I know Amazon is doing its own thing with GraphQL. Like they have their own client. I don't know how that ties in with what you're doing, but
yeah, that's a lot. The same thing I'm working on, AppSync.
Oh, okay. So that's okay. Yeah. So okay, I have heard about that, and I know that it's using part of Apollo also, right?
Right.
Or it's a fork of Apollo, maybe?
Well, it's using a fork of Apollo to create the client. But other than that, most of it's actually kind of a separate service.
Okay. Yeah, that does sound super interesting.
So before we get too deep on any subject, I would like to kind of step back a little bit. Do you mind giving the listeners kind of an overview of the state of JS, why you kind of put it together, and the success of it so far, or you know, what people have told you about these results that they are interested in seeing, and general feedback, I guess.
Sure. So This is the second year I've done the survey. So I started in 2016. And I guess the main reason I started was that I was like everybody else, I was a bit confused and fatigued, as the expression goes, about the state of JavaScript. So I was already using like React and Redux, or maybe not Redux, just React. And I was like, well, you know, is that a good idea? Should I be using something else? Should I be using Redux or Relay? Is it worth spending like a day or a week looking into those things? And so that gave me the idea of running a survey to ask people exactly those questions. And I think one thing I knew from the start is that I didn't want to only get data about usage. I also wanted to know about like satisfaction. Because I think there's something really frequent that happens in the tech world is that, you know, we have an established technology and then there's an up and comer coming up. But then it's really hard to know if that's like a real thing or just a passing fad. And React is a perfect example where for the first couple of years, people were like, oh, it's just a fad, you know, or you can't trust Facebook, or they had all these objections to React. But it turns out that React was the real deal. And I think now it's safe to say it's like the number one front-end library. So I wanted a way to like identify these, you know, next generation standards a couple years in advance to just give myself time to learn them. So that was the original reason behind the survey. And so the first year it did really well. I think I have some numbers. So the first year we had about 10,000 responses, and this year we had 23,000. So huge increase already just in 1 year. We had a lot of retweets, shares, upvotes, whatever. And I think people really responded to that because apparently I'm not the only one who felt a bit lost and a bit confused. I even had a really cool comment. Someone said that they probably wouldn't still be doing JavaScript if it weren't for the survey. So that kind of made my day to hear that.
Well, you know, one of the things that I found great about, you know, what you're doing is it's not just about the data, but the way that you present it, you actually like present it in such a really nice way with not only consumable graphs, but like it's a really nice design. And you can tell that there was a lot of time spent polishing like everything about it. You know, it's not just something that was thrown together. It's just like really well done, you know?
Thanks. Yeah, I should mention I wasn't the only one working on it this year. So I had some help from Michael Rambo. I guess we'll talk more about his project, Rising Stars, after this. And also from Raphael Bennett, who is the author of the Nevo JS visualization library. And so he's the one who did all the really awesome graphs and charts. We have this really cool chord diagram that people love to play with. We have, country by country visualizations. So this year we have a lot of new ways of looking at the data. And it's all thanks to him.
So and is that library open source?
Yeah. It's what's the URL? It's Nivo, so NIVO.rocks.
Okay, cool.
And I was pretty amazed because, so, you know, I don't know if people will care, but all three of us, me, Raphael, and Michael, we're all French. We're all JavaScript developers, and we all live in like a 50-mile radius in Japan.
No way, so, that's interesting.
Yeah, and so we all met through various local meetups, and it turns out that Michael had this awesome JavaScript project called Best.js, and Raphael had this really impressive visualization library, and so we all got together and started working on the State of JS survey and then on the Rising Stars stats.
Yeah, very cool. And I think that you had mentioned JavaScript fatigue. People talk about it a lot. I think the only way to really solve or improve something like that is to get facts, right? To get the statistics and to figure out the trends, both good and bad. That's the only way you really get out of fatigue syndrome that's kind of been going on. So it's awesome.
Yeah, I think there's always like a you know, gap between reality and your perception of reality. So I think things aren't as bad as people make them out to be, especially now. I think it's pretty clear that there's a few dominant solutions in each category, but people might still think that it's not the case, right? If you read like, you know, I don't know, if you read some random blog post, the blog post might still be like, so which one should you pick between these 10 JavaScript frameworks just because they want to have 10 things in their list? Whereas the reality is probably 7 of these aren't serious contenders.
Cool. So in your data collection, do you want to kind of go over the categories that you asked and that you kind of have? Because I know it's people can go check out the charts and all, but for the listeners that can't see it, kind of explain, you know, how they stack up.
Sure. So for the state of JS, we have, I think, about 10 categories. First one is what we call JavaScript flavors. And that's basically things like CoffeeScript or TypeScript, ClojureScript, all these things that kind of compile to normal JavaScript. And so ES6, which we also included kind of in that flavor category, is super popular. I think we had like 90% of people using it. TypeScript, I was surprised, was also very popular. And I think it's gaining a lot of adoption since last year. I remember like about 1 year ago, people were talking about Flow versus TypeScript, but it seems clear that TypeScript kind of has won that battle.
Interesting.
So, I mean, you know, not saying anything bad against Flow, but the momentum seems to be on TypeScript.
No, you can't argue
side.
With data. It's interesting, you know, to hear it because I haven't looked at that area yet. So it's super interesting. And I think a lot of our listeners will be interested too.
Yeah. By the way, I want to address something, which is that when people look at the results, they see like, oh, 80% users for ES6, that can be right. Remember, it's you know, it's a survey. So it's not going to be, I'm not going to be able to survey every single JavaScript developer out there. So the results are always going to be biased towards the type of people who would hear about the survey. So people who hang out on Hacker News and Twitter and Reddit. So it's, you know, these people, they would use ES6 at a really high rate. Obviously, you know, your own experience may be different. So I'm not trying to, you know, speak for every single developer on the planet Earth.
Right. I mean, it's basically the type of developer that is going to participate in this survey and kind of be like that. Someone that's even going to care about what this has to say is usually going to be the same type of developer that's kind of like very pragmatic and very like staying up to date with the latest things anyway, those type of people anyway, because if they're not, then and they don't care, they're not going to be doing stuff like this anyway. So like, you're right. You are going to be getting the more progressive developers, but what's really interesting about that is you're almost getting a glimpse into the future because these are the people that are going to be writing and creating the things that other people are going to be using 5 years from now. So, I mean, it's a very, very good snapshot, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a great point. These are the people who are like coding the future and kind of being that vanguard of early adopters. So moving on, the second category was front end. So this is dominated by React. Vue is also super strong. So not so much in like raw numbers, but in terms of satisfaction and interest, and also growth, as we'll see with rising stars. I think Vue is just gonna crush it next year and the years after. I wouldn't be surprised if it takes over like Angular. Maybe not React. I still see React as being kind of the number one, but Vue is a super strong potential number two, I would say. And by the way, I've never used Vue, so I consider myself like more or less unbiased about it, which, you know, I can't say that about React because I use it every day.
Right. I kind of agree with you on what you just said there about Vue. I'll too believe it's going to kind of be, it's going to overtake Angular. And maybe with some more tooling around other platforms with Vue, it's going to depending on what they do with that, whether or not it's going to like how much it's going to grow, but I think it's definitely going to overtake Angular this year.
And one of the interesting things here on the front, your front end section is you had the stat of, or the answer, I guess, that I've used it before and would use it again. I mean, it's basically your satisfied customers, right?
Yeah.
And React has a huge amount of those. They have 14,000 respondents said that they have used it and they would use it again. I mean, that's pretty, if you were selling a product and that was your survey, I mean, that's a great survey to have. So it definitely shows the support for React that not only have a lot of people used it, but they want to continue to use it.
Yeah, that's super important. For me, that's the most important metric out of the whole survey, is that ratio between people who have used it and want to use it again, and those who have used it but don't want to use it again. So that ratio is super high for React. For example, for Backbone or Angular, like one AngularJS, it's pretty low because those are older technologies. So that's always what I look at first. So next up, state management. So this is a weird category because we kind of threw in a lot of different things together. So we have GraphQL in there, which has a, so speaking of that satisfaction ratio, it has a really high satisfaction ratio and also really high like interest numbers. So people who've responded, I've heard of it and would like to learn it. So I'm kind of assuming that some of these people will transition into users, during the coming year. And since the satisfaction ratio is really high, you can assume that they're going to stick as GraphQL users. So I'm really curious to see how that chart evolves over the current year. And I'm expecting that the yellow bar gets smaller as the purple bar gets taller. The other things are kind of a mix. So there's Firebase, Redux, all with good numbers. One thing I wonder, like, kind of going off on a tangent here, but I personally feel Redux might go down a bit over the next couple of years because Apollo, which is a GraphQL client, now has its own GraphQL-based state management. And I think this might be a trend where you use GraphQL not just for querying data from the server, but also locally on the client, right? So that you end up using GraphQL queries for all your data, no matter where it comes from. So I think that's pretty appealing, and it might eat into Redux dominance over front-end state management.
Yeah, I can just say that in my current project, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm using the Apollo Link state for state management, and it doesn't have an installation of Redux or MobX or anything else.
Yeah, and I think like looking at a project like Gatsby.js, they're using GraphQL in a similar way if you want to kind of customize a project where you can use GraphQL to fetch data or to generate different pages. It's a really interesting use case, and that's kind of that project was really what kind of showed me the power of GraphQL in that case. And then shortly after, I saw Apollo Link State coming out and all these different tools built on the GraphQL specification. I think it's really interesting. And I could see that trend tending to happen because I also feel like Redux is kind of overused to some extent, where people added it to the project. It added a level of complexity to their project that it maybe didn't necessarily need. On top of that, you've got data fetching, so you've got to tack on Redux Saga or Redux Thunks. And then kind of GraphQL or Apollo could kind of simplify and unify a lot of these things.
Yeah, and speaking of Gatsby, both State of JS and Rising Stars are powered by Gatsby, so really cool project.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know what I've noticed, which is interesting too, is that you have Falcor on there, and then you also have Relay. Now, Falcor to me was like the first time I'd seen anything like GraphQL, and then I almost saw Falcor completely go away and GraphQL take over. Do you have any idea about how that all happened, or do you remember that?
So I've never used Falcor. My perception is that, a lot of the time, it's not so much about like the technical merits of different libraries or frameworks, but more how the communities are managed, how the, you know, the momentum is managed. So I think GraphQL, they just did a really good job of putting forward like a good concept, something that made sense to people, and then kind of stoking that flame and doing, you know, community events. Of course, it was used by Facebook, which was a huge thing. And so, I mean, you know, when you look at both, I don't think you should be like, oh, well, Falkir was better, or even looking at Relay versus Apollo, right? Don't just look at the technical merits. I feel that that's a mistake a lot of developers make. I think it's super important to look at the whole picture, right? So, you know, the community, the events, and the ecosystem as well. So maybe that might be why GraphQL is winning against Falkir.
So I guess we can continue on. Maybe we don't, I mean, there's a section on backend, but really for most of our listeners, we're not writing both the front and the back end, but it looks like Express seems to be kind of leading the way as far as JavaScript is concerned there. We see a little bit going on with Koa. Other than that, I don't really see anything, right? Is that kind of what you are getting out of this info?
I actually find it kind of weird, given the how dynamic the front end part of JavaScript is. On the back end, like Express is just crashing everything, and even though there's like newer solutions, but there doesn't seem to be the same like enthusiasm for them. So, you know, who knows? Maybe Vulkan will be in that chart next year. I don't know, but I do feel like there's a bit of a lull in the backend side of things.
I kind of like it though. I really kind of like it when everyone decides on something that works pretty good. And I mean, of course, people can nitpick this and that about Express, but in general, there you can pretty much do everything you need to with Express. So, I mean, of course, some people like the style of Koa or Happy better, but I kind of like, you know, with JavaScript, we don't really see that happening too often, right? Normally there's something, of course, that comes along and then people jump on that and then it gets fragmented. But I kind of like to see us heading towards more of this direction of people moving all towards one thing that works well enough, you know?
Yeah, maybe that's why it feels weird. I'm just not used to that stability yet.
Right. So maybe even Firebase could be thrown in that backend solution, and that had a pretty decent amount of momentum, but it's kind of a discrepancy whether you would even, you know, consider that as a full backend.
So I guess we can go over the other categories really quickly. Testing, I don't feel there's anything like that really stands out for me. Mocha, Jasmine, both doing good. Jest, doing really good for React testing. CSS. So CSS is a bit tricky because we didn't want to have it be too React focused. And I think a lot of the innovation in CSS is happening specifically in the React space. So style components, Radium, you know, Glamour, I'm pretty sure they're all React only. I might be wrong. But so here we don't have these. We have like the classic SAS, SCSS, LESS. Yeah, so this I guess this section of the survey isn't that meaningful, but we wanted to have it just in case. Build tools, Webpack, Gulp, NPM, all pretty standard. Remind me to talk about Webpacks when we look at Rising Stars, because something really interesting happened there, but it kind of happened too late for us to capture it in State of JS. And then mobile. So mobile, like React Native has super high satisfaction. I mean, this being React Native, good thing, I guess. PhoneGap, really low satisfaction. So there's actually more people who wouldn't want to use it again than would use it again. So I guess don't use PhoneGap. I don't know. But yeah, React Native, Electron, both doing great. And then native apps, you know, just the default, I guess.
Yeah, and we should probably spend some time digging into the React Native, your React Native findings, since, you know, that's a large part of what we like to specialize in. And, you know, the amount of people wanting to learn React Native in your survey is really large. And the satisfaction is high, like you said. I mean, I can barely even see the count for the people who said they won't use it again. I mean, it's tiny. It's almost non-existent. And then there's a huge section of people that want to learn it. And then you get into some of the industry discussions around the jobs and the developers and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I count myself as someone who wants to learn React Native. I guess I haven't had a chance to actually use it because I haven't been building mobile apps. And I think that's probably a reason why React Native usage numbers aren't higher. Probably it's just because people, you know, still build more web apps than mobile apps, maybe. I mean, I don't have any data to back that up, but intuitively, that's what I feel.
Yeah, I think for me, like, I've been doing consulting for React Native off and on for the last 2 years. And from what I've seen, I think there's about a 10 to 15% demand for React Native versus React in general. And I'm seeing that not only in the training, but also in the actual consulting work. There's a lot of demand for React Native versus the number of actual competent React Native developers. From what I can tell, I have so many people that I've either turned away or tried to help find a developer because they can't find any. So if it seems to be a good space to get in right now and make money, but also React, even React, from what I can tell, there aren't enough mid to senior developers right there right now.
Yeah, I think React, it kind of. It's like that the basics are easy, but you don't always know the right way to do things. You know how to do it, but you don't know if what you're doing is the right way or not, the right pattern. So I think that's kind of what makes the difference between junior and senior developers is not so much, of course, everybody knows how to write a React class or functional components and all this, but knowing like when to use which and kind of where to keep your state. All these little things, that's what makes the difference, I think.
Go ahead.
I was just going to echo what you guys are saying. I mean, at G2I, that's what we do, right? We try to find the senior, mid-senior, and higher-level React people. I mean, that's our entire focus. And we have design tests and challenges to dictate that, to figure that out, to find where someone is in React specifically or React Native specifically. And it's definitely a shorter, and HackerRank even put out a report recently, if you guys have seen it, that 33% of employers are looking for that mid, senior, and higher level React developer, but there's only 19% of the developers out there that are actually fit that criteria. So there's definitely a gap in that advanced level React and React Native talent pool, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah, and if you're wondering about pay, interesting fact, based on the data that we're looking at here, the highest of the mobile developers as far as pay is concerned is React Native by about, I guess, 2% or 3% above Electron and Native. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I hadn't really noticed that, actually, but you're right. Well, I don't know about React Native, but I know I think some frameworks like Ionic make it super easy to get started. So that will attract more junior developers, which it's not really a judgment. It's both good and bad. So it's not always like when you look at those salary charts, it's not always that if you learn X, you will earn more. It might be that X appeals more to more junior or more senior developers.
Yeah, and I guess if you kind of look at, so we talked about React on the front end and React Native on the mobile section, but they're so related that if you kind of look at them together, you kind of see why React is kind of the dominant force, because in React Native, the amount of people who want to learn it is more than twice React. So there's obviously a lot of people out there that know React and just don't really know React Native. And I would say that that's a small jump, really. If you do know React, taking that leap to React Native, that's kind of the point. They made it easier for you because it's very similar. But the happiness score there is high on both of them, and that just kind of, I guess, paints the picture of why React's so popular.
So should we maybe move to the rising stars?
Yeah. Can you give a quick overview again, exactly how this data was compiled?
Right. So Rising Stars. So like I mentioned, my friend Michael has this project called Best of JS. It's bestof.js.org. And what he does over there is every day he has a little script that gets the stars for a bunch of script. So he has this huge, you know, JSON of, I think, yeah, he has over 1,000 projects. So of course, Vue, React, and whatever, but also like smaller projects. Basically, he just adds every new interesting JavaScript project, and then he shows that data on best.js. And Rising Star is basically compiling all that year's data into one page that gives you the rankings for each category. So categories are so most popular projects overall, then front end, Node.js, React, Vue, mobile compilers, build tool, testing, IDEs, CSS, static sites, GraphQL, and miscellaneous. So there's a lot. The categories are a bit different from state.js because that's just how the data was laid out. And yeah, basically it looks at, so not the number, the total number of stars, but the number of stars added over 2017. So that's why it's called Rising Stars, right? It's trying to measure the progression, the momentum of each project. And number one, so the JavaScript project with the strongest progression is Vue.js, which added 40,000 stars in 2017. So basically every month it's adding over 3,000 stars, which, you know, if you have 3,000 stars on your GitHub project, you're already really, really happy. So imagine adding that every single month. And that's why I was saying that Vue is going to take over and become a, if not, you know, if not number one, at least number two, because, yeah, it's just growing so fast.
So what do you think the reason is for this, for the popularity this year?
Well, I mean, again, I haven't really used Vue, but from what I hear, it's like it has a very easy learning curve, maybe a bit gentler than React. It really seems like it's taking some of the concepts of Angular or other front-end libraries, but just updating them and doing it in a more like modern way. And also another factor, I think, is it has its own you know, router and state management library. Whereas React also has all these things, but they're like third party. And in practice, I don't think it makes a huge difference. But when you're starting out, like the perception that, oh, it's all these official libraries that work together that are maintained by the same team, that's really comforting, I think, compared to React, where you kind of have to hunt down these different tools.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think, just from people I've talked to, and again, I'm not a Vue user at this point either, but I think people just love the idea of official X, official state management, official router. And I think that's something that people picking up Vue really, really like, really appreciate. And like you said, it's kind of comforting just knowing that, you know, this is the way to do it. And it's one less doubt people have to have when they're building their app, is if they're choosing the right thing. It's just if they're actually building things right. And I think that's been a contributing factor to it, on top of it just being what seems to be a really high quality library with a great community and great community management.
Yeah, and also Vue has been adopted as the official front-end library for Laravel, I think. I don't know if it's official, but like I know it works really well together, so that was also pretty big. Like React, it works with, you know, any backend you want, but it's not like tied into anything that goes towards like that same all-in-one aspect where Vue gives you more guidelines, I guess. And so does Laravel. So it kind of works well together.
Yeah, and I guess while we're talking about Vue, and since we're talking about React Native, there's a mobile framework that's built on top of iOS and Android, similar to React Native, called Weeks. But it actually implements the Vue API. So you're basically building Vue templates that compile to native code similar to React Native. So that's created by, or it was created by Alibaba employees at first, but I believe it's open source now. So it's WEEX if anyone wants to take a look. To me, it's still kind of raw compared to React Native, but a lot of companies are using it in production. So it's obviously, it works.
Actually, that reminds me, one thing that I did hear, one reason why people still like React better than Vue or pick React over Vue is because of React Native and because of that kind of ecosystem around React, whereas Vue is kind of still only the web library. So I don't know if that's going to change with Weeks, but at least so far, React Native is probably a really, really strong argument for picking React.
Right. I mean, that value proposition of learning one framework and being able to build TV apps for Apple TV and then go and build something for mobile and then go build a web app without having to learn very many new things, that's pretty powerful. So that's definitely something that is going to be hard to kind of take away unless they, have something similar. It looks like they are trying to do something similar. That it would be good to have other people in that space for sure.
So some of the other popular projects, Create React App, really popular Puppeteer, pretty surprising, at least for me, because I hadn't, heard that much about it. Also, it launched in August, so just in 5 months, it managed to reach the number 4 spot on our list. Axios, VS Code. So that's actually a kind of a cool story. Like, I think last year VS Code really took over. Again, like, it kind of caught me by surprise. I hadn't, I had heard about it, but I was kind of like, well, it's a Microsoft thing. How good can it be? And then I saw the numbers in StateUp.js and then in Rising Stars. And I gave it a try, and it's now my code editor. Like, I've really switched over and I really like it. So, yeah, that's why in one of my blog posts I wrote as a recap for all this, I kind of had this point about the rise of Microsoft or Microsoft striking back. And I think between TypeScript and VS Code, it's really cool to see that they're kind of shedding their image of IE6. That's, for me, Microsoft is like IE6 making your life as a developer worse because you have to support these weird browsers. But it's kind of switching things around successfully. And I think that's really impressive because even though Microsoft, you'd think they're a huge company, they have all these resources. I think there's tons of examples of big companies that never managed to change their perception among developers.
You're totally right. I mean, Microsoft is killing it lately.
Yeah. And so my Microsoft perspective is a little different. I was a .NET developer for many years. And, to see what the things like you mentioned, and VS Code, I use it every day. It is most definitely my IDE of choice. Code Push was amazing for React Native, and just the things that they're doing that aren't related to what we're used to, even in the development side, right? They're small, lightweight, open source, which is kind of the opposite of what .NET is in every way.
Yeah, I think what changed is they're not trying to lock you in to a Microsoft ecosystem anymore. Before it always felt like, okay, this might be a cool tool, but it's pretty clear that they're only giving it to you, so you use their, enterprise software or whatever. And now it feels like they're just putting things out because they're good tools and there's no ulterior motive, right?
That's the way I'm seeing it. Like, they're just building stuff and giving it away and kind of contributing to the community in a way that was never done before in Microsoft. It's the complete opposite. In fact, people like Parrish Sharoom that now work at Facebook, he pretty much spent his entire last couple of years that I knew him working in Microsoft. And all he did was contribute to Facebook and build VS Code and build all this free stuff for React Native developers. So it's crazy. They're totally. And then now they have, I think, App Center, which is like a place for you to build and deploy and do all this other stuff with React Native. It's pretty interesting stuff they have going on there for sure.
Other success stories for this year, Prettier. So Prettier was actually our pick for our favorite project of the year because it really changes the way you code. And You don't need to worry about tabs versus spaces, semicolons, any of that. It did really well. I think it's pretty cool that whenever people are building not just like new libraries or new frameworks, but like the tools that make building these other tools easier. So Prettier, VS Code. I think for a long time, we didn't really have that in JavaScript, right? Everybody just had like Sublime Text and, you know, that was it. You just wrote your crappy jQuery code and that's it. But now we have all this infrastructure growing around JavaScript, and it really feels like JavaScript is maturing as a language and as an ecosystem. It's becoming like a real programming language.
Yep, I'm seeing the same thing. And, you know, over here at AWS Mobile, we're building and investing a lot in JavaScript as well, which is something that I did not expect to see when I came here. So it's definitely stepping up to the plate as far as, you know, being a first-class language, but even not only a first-class language, almost the most sought-after language, it seems like, in some organizations, especially, of course, for front-end stuff. I'm not going to say that's the case for, you know, back-end, but definitely for anything front-end, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a big change. Like, you know, I think people who are coming in the web and mobile ecosystem right now, they might not realize it, but if you have, like, even just 5 years of perspective, it is a pretty big change.
Yeah, and I think that, so that all this awesome data, it is like real data. This isn't some opinion piece. This is actual data, which is what's so great about these two pieces that you guys have compiled. I think my favorite one is by far the Prettier, because I think most of the nastiest discussions I've had in the last 5 years have been over code formatting.
Yeah.
And projects. And if people will finally just choose one that's opinionated and it's the same, it would make everyone else's life easier. So the fact that Prettier is so popular just makes me happy.
So another project I want to mention is Parcel, which came in 12th in the overall rankings. And you might be thinking, what's the big deal? Because it's not even the top 10. But if you expand the bar and look at the month-by-month breakdown, all these 14,000 stars happened in 1 month. It was launched in December. So that's super impressive that in just 1 month it could get so popular. And what Parcel is a blazing fast zero configuration web application bundler. So it's kind of doing the same thing as Webpack, but with zero configuration. And I think it's interesting because that's one thing people like complaining about with Webpack is how much config is involved and how, you know, how hard it is to learn all the settings and so on. So I personally don't really feel that because I've always used Webpack through like Gatsby or Next.js or Create React App. So like wrappers that kind of do that config for me. But clearly the fact that Parcel got so popular so quickly is an indicator that there's a need for something like that. And I wouldn't be surprised if like Webpack themselves add a zero config mode. In fact, maybe they have already. I'm not sure, but I think that's kind of the direction things are moving. Less configuration and more like just smart defaults.
I've definitely seen that discussion happening. So that's a good point. I guess we'll have to see.
So I don't know if there's any other frameworks or sections you want me to talk about. Or
Let's talk about, to wrap this up, let's talk about where people are hiring versus the availability of developers. Do you have any data on that? I think I may have seen something somewhere.
I don't really have data on that. That's actually something we could ask for next year. But yeah, I think it's a pretty safe bet. Like if you pick any of the like top projects in each category, you'll probably be able to find a job. I think especially in Rising Stars, since it measures popularity and growth, presumably a project that's growing really fast is going to create opportunities because the demand is going to be larger than the available developers. So I would definitely suggest learning things like Vue, React, and the other like top entrants in each category. React Native, yeah, for example.
Right. I think I saw there was another somewhat, there was some survey that was done that I saw. I thought it was yours. I guess it was another one. I think the largest, oh, you know what? I do have a link to it. Let me go ahead and pull it up so I can actually reference it here and other people can go see. The main thing that I got out of it was that so it's the 2018 HackerRank Developer Skills Report. I don't know how this data was compiled, but the one thing that I was looking at closely was the difference between the developers available and the employers looking. And the two largest differences there were React and React Native, React being the number one, though, in general. So if you were basically, a skilled React developer, I think there was something like 40% more jobs maybe than there were developers. So that's definitely a pretty good sign if you're a React developer. So, but I guess to wrap it up or to kind of get kind of closing out on this, what are like a couple of trends that you kind of, again, want to reiterate for 2018? And are you planning on doing all of this stuff, you and your two compadres, for 2018 data?
So yeah, we're definitely planning on doing it again. In fact, I kind of want to find a way to bring all these things together eventually. So I don't know what form it will take, but I had this vision of like a portal for JavaScript or something where you could really get up-to-date data on each library and like correlate that with satisfaction ratios, maybe even with jobs. Because what I always feel is when you want to use a new library or learn something, you just type it in Google and then you get it's GitHub repo, you get NPM, but that's about it, right? You might get a few blog posts, but there isn't really like an Amazon review system an IMDb for JavaScript libraries. So I think that's also part of why people are really interested in that data, because it's not really available anywhere else. Even though the data exists, it's just not compiled in a useful way. So I don't know. It's still kind of a dream project, but eventually I would love to have that central place where people can just learn more about JavaScript projects. But in the meantime, we're certainly going to do both the survey and Rising Stars again next year. And I guess my overall insights or trends, well, I think GraphQL is going to be a big one. I just hear about it a lot. And I think the key thing here is that people don't quite know what it is yet. So I think we're going to see a lot of people, like new people coming in, learning what GraphQL is, making, mistakes, coming up with solutions. So I think things in that space are going to move a lot in 2018. And then more long term, I think, projects like Reason, maybe ClojureScript, all these ways of writing JavaScript, without writing JavaScript, those might be really big in the future. So I think currently JavaScript is still like a language, I guess, but in the future it might become just more like a compiler target or a kind of this step where you don't even write JavaScript anymore. It's just there for the browser, or maybe even with WebAssembly and all this other stuff coming up, it might evolve even more. So yeah, I think JavaScript is in a place where it's really growing and evolving in an interesting direction right now. And that's probably why it's kind of becoming the default language or the dominant language for everything, I guess.
Okay, cool. So before we get to our picks, is there anything you want to kind of just go over or discuss that we haven't really touched on? Or is there anything that you want to plug that you're kind of working on before we get to the actual picks?
Well, I guess I could plug Vulkan again. So vulkanjs.org. If anybody is like, has an idea for a new project or wants to try it out, wants to play with React, GraphQL, Apollo, all this good stuff. I actually just finished a new tutorial. So it's like an interactive tutorial where you kind of build an app. Well, or actually you build the tutorial as you go along. So it's kind of weird, But in practice, it's actually, it's a cool concept where you're, you know, you're on step one and it tells you, okay, here's how you add the route to step two. And then you go and do that. And then you can go to step two and so on. So, if people want to check that out, go to the Vulkan site and follow the install instructions.
Awesome. I'm going to have to check that out for sure. I guess we'll go ahead and get to the picks. So I guess I can start off with Lee. Do you have any picks today?
Yeah, so I guess my pick is the humanetech.com. And I don't know if you guys have really discussed this a lot, but some early guys from Google and Facebook kind of got a consortium about aspects of our youth. And since I have three kids of my own and have seen some of this attention issues, it just kind of hit me, and I've been reading into it, and it's a pretty cool concept of teaching kids good boundaries with technology. So I thought it was pretty awesome. It's called the Center for Humane Technology is the name of the group.
Very good pick, actually. That's interesting. And I just looked, and there seems to be a Medium blog called Humane Tech, but I don't think it's the same thing actually at all. But it's I just saw that after listening to your description. Okay, cool. Spencer, do you have any picks?
Yeah, my pick's going to be a blog post called 5 Things to Know About Images in React Native. I found images can be a tricky thing, especially when you're developing on like a local development machine where things happen fast, but then you go out into the real world and on Android, images can just be a pain. This is just a good article, just kind of going over different considerations, different strategies of actually dealing with images in React Native.
Awesome. Sasha, do you have any picks?
Well, I'm going to pick something a bit different. So my pick is the sport of bouldering, because I feel it's a really good sport for programmers specifically. I have a lot of friends, programmer friends who do that. I know it's super popular in San Francisco as well. And it's kind of a cool sport because it's all about problem solving and kind of figuring out the solution to a boulder. So to like how you position your body to climb it. And it's not, of course, strength is important, but you can really go at your own pace. It's not like a team sport where you have to run after a ball and you get yelled at if you don't get it right. So I've really enjoyed doing more and more bouldering lately. And if you don't consider yourself like an athlete or a really sporty person, but you want to find a good physical activity to do, you should definitely check it out.
And to be clear, you're talking about bouldering, like climbing rocks and mountains and things like that exactly. With your bare hands.
Yeah, that one.
That's awesome. That's so cool. So do you wear equipment that like holds you if you fall?
So bouldering specifically, you don't need any equipment because you're climbing like if you're doing it outside, you're climbing boulders, which are like a couple meters high at most. And if you're doing it indoors in gyms, there's a big mat so you can fall down safely. So that's kind of the cool part. You don't really need any equipment. You can, you know, just go to the gym and rent some shoes there and get started.
Cool. Okay. So bouldering, they call it bouldering because you actually do also climb boulders. That's I learned something new today.
Exactly.
So I have two picks. The first one is a book that I just started reading that's been on my list for like 2 or 3 years now, I think. It's called The Pragmatic Programmer. And very rarely do I really fall in love with a book this quickly, but it is amazing. And I'm only like a couple of chapters in. But already, it's not only about programming. In fact, it's kind of about, to me, obsession of like life and kind of being very passionate about whatever you're doing. It doesn't have to be programming. It's kind of, that's the kind of the feel I'm getting from the book. But of course, there's also a lot of logic in there too that does apply to programming. So I would definitely get it. It's one of those books that you can get something out of just in the first few minutes. The second pick is, and you're going to be hearing probably some more AWS stuff because, you know, I kind of talk about what I'm doing at the time. And since I'm with AWS, I am doing a lot of AWS stuff. But I'm releasing a blog post tomorrow about authentication with React Native. And to me, authentication hasn't been easy at all in React Native. I haven't really found a solution that I really like. But I think we've kind of put something together that is awesome here. And it's a combination of a couple of different things. And you can get a two-factor authentication complete with, you know, all of the different security credentials with using JWTs, everything set up in about 15 minutes using a combination of Amplify, which is an open source library from AWS, and AWS Cognito. So I encourage you to check out my blog post. It's called Authentication in Depth with React Native, and it should be out by the time this comes out, and kind of go over it and kind of check it out if you're interested in how to authenticate users pretty easily with React Native.
So actually, I have one more thing to plug. I'm also working on a blog post, which should be out by the time you hear this. It will be on the Apollo blog, and it's called 5 Common Issues with GraphQL Apps and How to Fix Them. And I basically go over lessons I learned building Vulkan. So like, it's not so much about specific, you know, bits of codes, but more about patterns and like strategies to avoid performance issues with GraphQL, code duplication, things like that. So check it out if you are interested in GraphQL.
Sounds awesome. All right. Well, I think that goes ahead, and we're going to go ahead and wrap it up for this episode of React Native Radio. So thank you for listening. That's episode 86. Sasha, thanks for coming on.
No problem.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week.